This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to What's News Dunedin, brought to you by Casa Valencia, this radio show that spawned from the 23,000-plus strong local Otipoti Dunedin What's News Dunedin Facebook group. The group has been putting the social back in the social media since 2020 with respectful adult debate and a sense of humour. I'm your host, Richard Knights. On today's show, we talk to our wonderful guest, Anna Knight, an Alliance Party candidate, who'll be telling us a bit more about themselves and what they do, as well as helping us look back at the posts that generate the most interactions over the last 7 days on the What's News Dunedin Facebook group. Those three posts this week are Joe Gaylor, elected to Dunedin City Council, beating Aaron Hawkins by just 89 votes. A Dunedin individual who was scammed out of $800,000 over 5 years by someone pretending to be a US general. And the new roundabout at the intersection of Orari and Otaki Streets in South Dunedin. Welcome to the show, Anna.
Hi, great to be here.
Absolutely fantastic. Now, before we do all of that stuff, the interesting newsy stuff, we do have our pun of the week. So as a member of the group, you'll see that we have a pun day Monday, and we get our people to bring their best dad jokes. No adult jokes allowed at 12 on a Friday. But so the best puns, the best dad jokes, and whoever gets the most laugh reacts gets the joke brought on the show on a Friday. Max Reed is a constant winner of the puns, and it's one of his this week.
A dubious honour there, Max.
Absolutely, he's a friend of the show, I keep mentioning him just so I get more competition. I want more people to kind of go in and go, I can knock Max off his perch. You know, it's fairly big shoes to fill, but let's see if they can do it. So this is Max pun of the week for this week. The gentleman who invented Tupperware has died. Sadly, his funeral has been delayed while his family continues to search for the lid to his coffin.
Oh, that is relatable content, though.
It is. It's hard
for everyone, I think.
I think so. I don't know about you, but I've got a cupboard where all those kind of plastic pots go to die.
Yeah.
And I've got a little.
We live in hope. It's a bit like the sock Bermuda Triangle, isn't it? Really, the lid
bit.
Of the Tupperware. They're all somewhere.
Yeah. Do you want to know something very interesting about me? Well, I don't know. I'm sort of building up to be interesting, but I'm not sure it is anymore. I've never lost a sock in the wash.
Do you
I've
actually
never lost a sock in the wash?
You're a genius. I don't know what your secret is, but I think you better share it on a radio show one day.
Well, potentially that's a whole series of radio shows all on its own, like a sort of like, you know, a side hustle podcast about like how not to.
But that's very reassuring what you're saying right now.
But I've got a little bit of OCD. You see, so things like lids on pots, I have to make sure they are there. Otherwise, my wife and my family will tell you, if I lose something, I turn the house upside down because I cannot stand the fact that something that I know where it is has gone missing.
Oh, yeah, it's hard. I think I'm slightly that way inclined as well.
I lost a pair of jeans once.
You haven't gotten over it yet, clearly.
Well, not what seriously, I don't wear jeans very often, normally shorts or like jogging pants.
Oh, that's right. You're
stuff.
A very suit and tie man. It's
suit
one of your distinguishing characteristics.
Suit and tie most of the time.
It's very impressive.
Thank you very much. Shorts and T-shirt outside of that. And I lost a pair of jeans, and they were an expensive pair of jeans, and I just did not know for the life of me where they were. And I went to go off to visit somewhere. I can't remember what it was. Went to get like a little holder out, and they were in the bottom of the holder because they were dark. So I hadn't seen them in the bottom of the holder. So even though I thought I'd lost a pair, I found them again.
Oh,
and my OCD was happy after that.
Yeah, I've nearly lost this ring.
Oh, wow.
Numerous times. They had to put it over the loudspeaker in Raglan when I was camping there when I first came back to New Zealand. And they said a gold ring, even though there's just a tiny sliver of gold on the top of it.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Very hollow, but it's very precious to me because it was made by a friend in Greece who just does that for a living, which is a really hard living, I think.
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
So no, but anyway, never lost a sock.
Oh, well done, well done.
So
and I do like, thank you, Max Reed, for the gallows humour as well.
That's absolutely, we like that.
Open casket funeral.
Absolutely. Now, we also have our three pop questions. So these are the three questions that I've decided will tell my listeners exactly what they need to know about you as a person without them asking anything else, right? So first question, cream teas. You have a scone, you have jam, you have cream. And the question is, very simply, what goes on the scone first, the jam or the cream?
Well, you see, Richard, you take a big spoon and you get a scoop of a massive, massive scoop of cream, and you put it on top of your scone, and then you get a small teaspoon and you get the jam and you put it right in the middle. So it becomes really a work of art.
See, I can't agree with you, because for me, it's jam first, cream top. You can't spread jam.
I'm going to stop you there. Your executive producers.
They set you up.
They put me up to this. They said they just wanted to see what you would do.
Jill Bowie, Kelly Campbell,
kind of monster do you think I am, Richard?
Well, I was starting to wonder. I thought we knew each other, and then suddenly there was this strange scone story going on from across the table, and I'm thinking, that's not the Anna that I know. So I mean, it's been lovely.
My grandmother was brought up in Kent, right. Born in Kent, I believe. I could have had the granny visa and everything. I didn't even need to go to France and get my European passport that way. I could have done it that way.
Well,
but is that very far from where? See, my geography is terrible.
It's down southwest. So Kent is southeast.
Right.
So it's kind of like down towards Penzance and Land's End is where the Cornish and the Devonshire cream teas are. And Cornwall do it properly with jam, then cream.
They do.
Which Kelly and Jill, if you're listening, and then Devon do it the wrong way, which is the cream and then that strange dollop of jam on the top, because it just doesn't work that way.
But it's art.
Is it?
Practical concerns like mess when you're talking about art, Richard.
Well, yeah, I know. Okay.
I tried to make it believable, Kelly and Jill, if you're listening.
Anyway, wait till I see them both. Anyway, that's any question you can get wrong on my show. But the second question.
I sort of got it wrong.
So, exactly, but you got it wrong because you were told to.
Yeah,
yeah. We'll let that one slide. Second question though: who is your favourite Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
I'll see this one. I feel like I've missed out. I had extracurricular activities when I was growing up in Nelson that led me to always miss the after school funnies.
Right,
had a terrible life. My brother says this quite often. He says, what an awful life you had. We got to just live the life of Riley, but because you went to a girls' school in town, you missed out on everything. I'd arrive home and they'd be all watching as a family the Blues Brothers together. And I missed out on some of those moments. And the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I believe, is one of those things that I would just get in the door and. But, you know, I liked the cut of the jib of the sewer rat. I think having a leader who's your spiritual leader who's, I believe, I may be totally, this is just the vibe that I got from him, was that he's also a character that seems to me like one of those people, you know, Miyazaki does this quite well with him, his cartoons, where you get to be good and evil all at once. Mm. I really love cartoon characters like that. I think that they bring something to the table.
Well, rats are inherently evil because they are. I'm scared of rats. That's why they're horrible things.
Yes.
So, but then he was all this. He was like a Zen master.
Yes.
Master Splinter. So you know.
Yeah, but also I like the name Donatello. I don't know what anything about his. I believe Michelangelo is the sort of Bart Simpson of the
kind of party dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no wrong answers with the turtles.
Yeah. Like, okay. Well, I'll go with the rat.
Master Splinter.
Is that because he carries a wee cane?
I've got no idea. I don't know what the origins of that are. Like, but I'd like to go back a little bit and say, like, people watch the Blues Brothers without you.
Yes.
That is not fair.
That's
criminal. That is a crime against humanity. It's my favourite film. I've got a tattoo of Elwood, and my boy's got a tattoo of Jake. Because, you know, he's always...
I had to compensate for this later in life, so I did actually see it, but... Yeah.
It's best film ever.
Yeah.
Best film ever.
I believe it is a good one.
I've only watched it about 5 million times and know all the words. So, like, you know, we could stop this now and just do the show for you. Like, literally, just as a recital. I think that would have people turning off in their droves, but that's not the point.
Well, Connor clearly hasn't had as deprived a childhood as I have.
No, that's the good thing. I'd like to think I've done all right with that. Now, third and final question. Would you rather give up salt or give up sugar?
Well, probably sugar. I never was a sweet tooth as a kid, bizarrely. And salt, I just, you know, I really am into olives. Everything salty I'm really quite into.
Right.
Yeah.
I think I'm the same. I'm much more, give me a packet of crisps over a chocolate bar. every day of the week. I'm not saying I don't like chocolate, but if I've got a choice, it's going to be savoury over sweet for me. So I think I'd be exactly the same. I think I'd kind of go, unless it's a cup of coffee, and then I have 7 sugars in coffee.
Right.
Which...
I'm a black coffee and nothing out, like a real purist when it comes to coffee.
I go into a cafe and I start pouring sugar and people just walk away. People just look at me.
At least it's not in tea. Do you do that in tea as well?
No, I don't have any sugar at all in tea. And that's where I get most of my, I spend all day drinking tea because I'm British. So literally I have 10 cups of tea a day and that's all I drink. I don't drink anything else. So, but I don't have sugar in tea. I used to have like 1 sugar in a tea. Then I sort of worked out how many teaspoons of sugar I was having in a day. When I drink 10 cups of tea a day, I was 10 teaspoons of sugar. I'm thinking like, at some point I'm not going to be able to get out the door again, you know? So I kind of knocked that on the head and I felt sorry for my teeth. And I thought maybe it's a good idea not. So I just had tea as it's supposed to be drunk without sugar. But if I have a coffee, genuinely like at least 7 spoons of sugar in there, sometimes more, depending on the size of the cup.
And is it English breakfast or Earl Grey?
English breakfast tea. Yeah, I just like normal tea. Don't give me any of this Darjeeling or Earl Grey rubbish. I just want...
I'm an Earl Grey girl myself. Or a mix.
But just the colour in the cup makes me sad with an Earl Grey. Like genuinely, it doesn't even look like a cup of tea. It looks so glum.
Yeah.
Forget the taste. It just looks unhappy.
Things can get pretty beige, can't they?
Mm, exactly. Mm. And Earl Grey tea is about as beige as it gets, in my mind. In a grey kind of way. Anyway, let's talk about the news. So, big news this week. Clearly, we've had a by-election. The results are in, and Joe Gaylor is the winner and replaces, unfortunately, for the passing of Jules Radich, replaces Jules at the table. It's been a pretty weird and wonderful campaign, I have to say, being part of it. But the one thing I want to kind of say is like the worst part of it for me is the results, right? They go through this horrible, protracted process of letting people know who's won, you know? So polling closes on the Tuesday or whatever the day is, midday. Then they try and give you a result based on 85% of all the results, which basically means next to zero. But then the media jump on it, so then there's a winner, there's a leader. And then the following day they kind of give you all the results based on all the votes that are in, apart from the special votes. And then the day after that, they then count the special votes because they have to be double-checked to make sure people aren't voting twice and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's an emotional roller coaster, really.
It's cruel. It is genuinely cruel, right? You know, because straight away we start off with Jo winning the lead by 800 votes. Then we do the next result. She's ahead by 250 votes. She finally wins by 89 votes. But, like, at some point that could have flipped over and there's someone with elation kind of going, I'm winning, oh, no, I've lost. Like, as a candidate, I actually gave this feedback this time as well. I wrote back to the electoral people and said, this is the cruelest thing you can be doing to someone. I am quite happy as a candidate to have polling closed midday on that day and find out in 3 days' time whether I've won, lost or not. You know, simple as that. There's no requirement to do anything else. Give me the results when the results are finalised and stop with the cruel, you know, I mean, there'd have been sleepless nights for Aaron and Joe.
Yeah.
You know, genuinely. And that's and that, to me, that is just absolutely unnecessarily revolting.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's better if it was announced once it's done.
The only people to win in the meantime are the media. Because they get to stir it all up and, like, you know, and the gossips. And they get to be in, you know, like, oh, will they, won't. No, but actually, like it's people's lives you're messing with.
Mm.
Like, genuinely.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of things that could be tidied up. I think you're also a good campaigner for capping the spending.
The spending is abhorrent.
Yeah.
Genuinely abhorrent. I'll be very interested to see what the candidates have spent. I know for a fact that Joe Gaylor would have spent a lot of money because they were in the paper, they were all over the place. Getting there, you know, every time I open up my phone, like they're popping up on my phone as I looked at the ODT news and all that kind of stuff. I spent $880, right? And that's not because I don't have other money that I could have spent, but it's because I don't believe that I should be buying a seat at the table.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you there. Yeah.
But then you've got other people that are spending fortunes. When you consider an ad in the ODT is $3,500,
mm. Yeah, and also that can go right up to the wire, apparently. When did that ODT article run? Because, you know, you have to have signage down, et cetera, but...
Signage needs to be down by midnight the night before. So, Monday night midnight would have been the last time for signage around it. But you can have...
Full-page ads
up until that Monday. You know, you can have... Yeah, you can have your pop-ups on your phone.
Yeah, it seems a bit incoherent, doesn't it, really?
It does. And it's $55,000 is the max.
Mm. Yeah, that's
right?
A lot.
Which is absolutely, when you consider that people like Andrew Sims and Benedict Ong spent in excess of $40,000 each at the election last time.
Well, even for the national election, it's $36,000, the limit for a candidate.
Wow.
So it's more
for a local candidate. Mm. And some people are spending that to get elected. And that, to me, is not a level playing field. Mm. It's not accessible. It's not accessible for people that are, you know, you're not measuring competency at that point. You are literally measuring who got their face in front of the most people. And that's a very different thing to whether you're actually going to be any good at doing the job. Mm. I don't know how you measure how someone's going to be good at doing the job, like prior to actually electing them and seeing whether they're any good at doing the job, because that's a difficult thing to kind of, to gauge anyway, but it shouldn't just be about whose face you recognise.
Yeah. Well, you know, as a former sound engineer, I used to always complain that to be a sound engineer, you had to basically wear black and have a shaven head and be male to be taken seriously. And it's a very similar thing with electoral candidates. I think that if you talk about the economy, and you're a man and you spend a lot of money on your advertising, then you're pretty much a shoo-in. And that seems like a very sad state of affairs.
It does.
But it's people's attention spans. You know, people just aren't putting the time in. But also, you know, and OIR is doing great work too. You know, shout out to Dr. Barb for what she does. I think
fantastic
that's
work.
Really great that,
awesome,
that we get more information out there. And that, I understand, is a relatively recent development.
I think it's in the last two elections, so the by-election and 2025, because we didn't do that in 2022. Mm. So
yeah,
but it's just, but to me, I mean, I want to say congratulations to Jo. I don't know her. I had a couple of words to her while we were campaigning, but I don't know her as a person. But they spent a lot of money. Mm. You know, you can't deny that they did. And there's a lot of candidates that you could look at and kind of go, well, would they have been better candidates? Mm. You know, it's you know, you've got your people, like everyone that puts their hand up, right? I don't care whether you're right-wing, left-wing, centrist, monster raven loony party in the UK, whatever. Like anyone that puts their hand up deserves to be applauded for
doing that. It's not an easy thing.
No.
And we need more ordinary people to run for it to be less scary. You know, I don't think that Jacinda Ardern has a monopoly on imposter syndrome. I think most people running for office feel that way.
Yeah, but the trouble
in
is
the office.
Well, exactly. But the trouble is, when you do put your hand up to run, the abuse that comes back the other way is genuinely.
Well, Jacinda knows something about that.
Abhorrent, and I know a fair bit about it myself, because it would appear that if you run on a platform of kindness and caring, you open yourself up
for... Those are dirty words, yeah, apparently.
Yeah, you open yourself up for a hell of a lot of abuse. Mm. I had people come after my job this election.
Oh, my goodness.
After my job. You know, that, to me, crosses a line. I mean, you know, it's bad enough that my family have to see some of the comments that are made about me simply because I insist on truth and kindness. Mm. But for then people to come at me to try and get me unemployed...
Yeah, that's next level.
Next level, eh?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I did appreciate at that info night that the DCC told us what to expect. You know, they had that thing, well, we're pleased to announce, you know, this is great, whereas you're getting up there all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed just thinking about running. And they tell you, this year we've now got a package so that you're allowed to have home
security
surveillance. That's in the budget now. And, you know, it really hits at home a little bit. And I want to congratulate them for doing that, because I think that's a very nice way. I mean, you know, it's a good way of getting the message across that they are there backing you, that you've got some institutional support. But
shouldn't need it though, should you?
You shouldn't need it, but that's that's unfortunately the reality of, yeah, I guess social media and et cetera has upped the ante on the sort of individualistic keyboard warrior approach to life, where people feel like they're in a wee bubble and protected.
Can say what they want.
And can say what they want.
I know.
It's cowardice.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I make the point today is that on the ODT, they've this is Pink Shirt Day today, Anti-Bullying Day today.
Hence
the pink shirt, which obviously good for radio, would have been better on TV. but there's some abhorrent bullying going on the ODT website today, Facebook page today.
What's happening?
Against Aaron Hawkins.
Oh, goodness.
Because he's lost. But on Pink Shirt Day, the fact that ODT are letting it happen, I just... Abhorrent. Nasty, you know.
It was a twin cross there. 89 votes is nothing. It was what, 0.5%?
Less than 0.5%.
Yeah.
Of the people who voted. Anyway, we'll move on to the next story, which is Dunedin individual scandal of $800,000 over 5 years by someone pretending to be a US general. Now, it's easy to say, in my mind, oh, you shouldn't get scammed. It's easy to say, oh, stupid person for, you know. But actually, I think it is absolutely so sad that people prey on the kindness, the insecurities, the, you know, whatever it might be, the loneliness of people to literally steal their money. This person has gone in eyes wide open, thinking that they are having a genuine conversation with a genuine human being. The fact that someone can do this to another person in the pursuit of ill-gotten gains, I lose a lot of faith in humans when I read stories like that. And not the person that got scammed, because it's so easy. That to me is actually, they're so clever with what they do. They spend a lot of time in how they're trying to put that together to make it believable, to make it hit home with the person that they're preying on. Mm. I don't blame the person. I'd never blame the person that's got scammed, right? Mm. I wish there was better things in place to help them not be scammed, but it's not their fault.
Yeah, and often they'll add things in there to make that person feel more humiliated and therefore not red flag it or
yeah exactly
call it
to
out.
Feel guilty or to feel
yeah
or to feel
to make
kind
them
of
feel dirty or
exactly
yeah
$800,000
that's a lot of
money
scamming
and I don't know what wasn't told in the story or whether it might not be sort of concluded yet. So whether they got any of that back, because that's the heartbreak thing. Like, you know, if I'm saying to all you Nigerian princes out there, if you want to come and try and scam me, you wouldn't get $800,000. Like, you might fool me, but like, so about $80 is about as much as the bank account is going to let me go to before the bank pulls the pin on that one, you know. So it's like they seem to find those people as well. That's what I've noticed about some of these scams. They somehow manage to find the people that have actually got the money to be scammed of the money
and are fragile enough.
Yeah,
yeah, which means that they have a degree of knowledge or of
something, isn't it? It's almost like they've done their research beforehand, and it's not in any way, shape, or form random. You know, I get emails all the time like, you've won a share of $12 million for a Nigerian, you know, estate. Then you just kind of look at it and go, yeah, no, fine. Like, you don't fall for that one. But this is far more in your face. And if people are listening, like, if you have been scammed, don't feel like it's your fault. Mm. It's because they're very clever people.
I felt very stupid once. I'll tell you my scamming story.
Go on.
I actually did a translation, which I wasn't paid for, and then they tried to get me to pay, you know, like had a bounce check situation. Or I can't remember all the details, but the fact that I actually did a job, that shows you, because I was a real workaholic, and in the speed of things, sometimes you don't always have the ability to check every, you know, and if you've got a short deadline but, you know, the stuff that I was given to translate was awful, but I have, you know, it was like a short script, and it was just so terrible that I sort of had fun with it, translating it. but it was, yeah, but, you know, I went to that extreme. So, you know, this can happen.
It is. It's very possible.
And it's so... you know, translators are, you know, sort of 86% female workforce who are, you know, shattered and in our own little worlds. Some of us are syndicated. You know, we have our union, authors' unions and things, which I was part of in France. But you know, you're essentially on your own, and you're facing. You know, you've got a bit of connection, but you're facing a bit of vulnerability and particularly a large flow of, you know, requests all the time with short deadlines and turnarounds and not much ability to check. You know, after that experience, I obviously did a bit more checking. You know, this would have been early in my career. But it is very easy to get caught out.
It is, absolutely. Because you expect a level of honesty from people to start off with, don't you? Like we are genuinely wired to kind of trust people, not implicitly, but certainly,
well, you know, and
certainly
I've had
to a certain, you know, a starting point at least.
Yeah, I mean, I've had some weird translation jobs as well from some very reputable firms.
Right.
So to have an unusual document was not, you
was
know,
not unusual.
Was not a red flag for me.
I want to talk about roundabouts because the new roundabout has been put in down South Dunedin at the back of Mike Ten and Bunnings and that kind of area between Anderson Bay Road and Portsmouth Drive. There's something about roundabouts that just like the New Zealanders just really struggle with to start off with. They don't get the indicating side of things. You know, they don't get the giving way side of things. They don't get driving around in the right way kind of thing some of the times. But they don't like them. They genuinely don't like roundabouts.
Who's they, sorry?
Kiwis.
Oh, Kiwis.
Or they don't appear to, at least. Or certainly people in Dunedin, like, don't you know, you put a new roundabout in and literally, like, the rage starts coming left, right and centre. And this new one has caused a bit of rage because it's a big roundabout.
Mm.
So for some reason, people think it should be a small roundabout. Why they think that, I don't know, but it's a big road, right? So if you'd have a small roundabout in a big road, like no one's using that roundabout. They're literally just driving. They're just using it the same way they always did. So the kind of size of the road dictates the size of the roundabout. Mm. And I come from a
place. Must be a safety thing.
Well, it is, absolutely. I come from a place where roundabouts are a big thing. You know, we have in the UK that we have roundabouts that can be four lanes wide, managed by traffic lights, with seven or eight junctions coming into that roundabout. To you know, and some of them, the circular size of them are probably bigger than some small villages in New Zealand. That's kind of, you know, but they have a purpose. They encourage traffic flow.
Yeah.
That's
look,
what
they're
I'm
there for. A fan of roundabouts. We're you know, one of my hats is that I'm on the community board, the Waikawaiti Coast Community Board, and we've got an area that was de-roundabouted.
Right.
Which happens to be right on the turn off to Waitati, where you've got several shops. You've got a bus stop there.
Yep. Is that State Highway 1?
Yes, it's on State Highway 1.
Would have had problems with accidents,
well,
people getting hurt.
Exactly. And, you know, my friend Amy, who's at the Waitati Merchant Store, says she watches from the store the near misses every day.
Wow.
And, you know, we've been trying to get some action on this for some time.
Yes.
With the NZTA, because, you know, local council can't actually do much about it.
No, because State Highway 1.
Yeah. Which really, and of course, we're looking handmade signs now saying slow down. That's all we can, you know, that's all.
Can they re-round about it? Because it, like, genuinely.
It would be wonderful if they could. Yeah.
They serve such a purpose.
They could at least have speed limits that are staggered the way they do out towards the airport.
Yeah, to drag you down to a more manageable speed, so that, you know, when you hit that bend, which is the blind bend, then at least you're actually travelling at a speed that is more suitable for the environment that you get to. It's just, it shouldn't be so hard.
No, it really shouldn't.
It shouldn't. But I say, I drive around Dunedin regularly. I mean, I spend a lot of time in the car going to see all parts of Dunedin, and the people driving roundabouts, they just don't seem to get it. But if they did get it, they'd actually understand that it's actually all there to help them.
Yeah.
You know, and actually, I've seen people drive the wrong way around roundabouts.
Mm.
And that just, like, it's, again, like, you know, why have they got speed bumps coming into roundabouts? Because you wouldn't slow down otherwise. Like, genuinely, if you were conscious, a good conscious driver, and you saw the roundabout coming, you should be slowing down. But Dunedin, they go, I'll just keep driving the same speed.
Also, roundabouts are kind of lovely. You can put things on them, like
put things in the middle and plant them out. Like, absolutely. Yeah, that's like, you know, it's one of those things, actually, they should be embraced.
And you'll love this.
Cool.
You know that in a former life I was a yellow vest in France.
And, no.
Oh, well, there you go. There's a tidbit for you for today.
There you go. I wasn't expecting to learn something today, Anna, but now here we are.
Yeah, well, and you know, that was all about horizontal democracy, so Black Occupy. And one of the things that they occupied, Richard,
were roundabouts.
Mm. And they, you know, they were sort of reinventing the wheel in terms of democracy and process, but it was very... It was quite wonderful. And a lot of people maligned the yellow vests. I was initially one of those people. I'd sort of drunk the Kool-Aid thinking, who are these people who are against the gas tax in France? Because surely, you know, getting less petrol fumes is a good thing and lowering emissions. But, you know, we're talking Macron, who was born with a silver spoon in his mouth and who, you know, everything he was doing was a lot of what he was doing was anti-environment. And some of his first things pro-environment, supposedly, were directly affecting the poor. So, you know, he was talking a double game. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm mixing my metaphors here.
Just mix as many as you like. We'll have a metaphor soup.
But, you know, one of the great slogans, because there were some fantastic slogans that came out of that movement, and one of them was, finally, roundabouts are useful for something, as a kind of a nod to the fact that they weren't really anti-green as a movement, that they were, you know, weren't for driving war. But the thing is, the reason this directly affected the poor was that the people that are having to drive the most were the ones that were getting pushed out of the cities.
Right.
They were the ones with several jobs to make ends meet.
Yes.
And so they were, you know, that's why the gas tax was the sort of clincher, the way that maybe in Chile with the metro price rise or things like that. You know, there seems to be a bit of a penny drop moment where people, you know, that the sort of straw that breaks the camel's back. Yeah. Anyway, that was a long aside vaguely to do with roundabouts.
That's all right. I want to talk about you and stuff about you in a second, but before we do, I'm just going to get a wonderful word from our super duper sponsor.
Dunedin, meet your new favourite bakery. Casa Valencia at 53 Musselburgh Rise is serving up freshly baked bread, pastries and gorgeous cakes. And if you haven't tried the ube donut yet, you are seriously missing out. Our signature purple yam donut and purple yam drink are the must-try combos your taste buds have been waiting for. Pair it all with a hot or cold drink, grab a cake for someone special and make your day a little sweeter. Casa Valencia, 53 Musselburgh Rise, Dunedin. Open Monday to Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. See you there.
Have you been to Casa Valencia?
No, I wish I had. By the sounds of the ad,
they're right down next to my office, so I'm there every day.
Oh.
I was there before I came here. So they just got fantastic people. Filipino bakery. They do some fantastic food. So if you do get the chance, just go.
They've got something. Sounds great.
They've got something called a crazy donut. It's not called a crazy donut. I've called it a crazy donut. So that's and because I go there every day, they go to me, we've got the crazy donut. And it's a donut with a fried chicken inside with spinach and spicy mayo and cheese. So it's like a savoury thing inside a donut shell. Shouldn't work, but it does.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's genuinely delicious. So I called it the crazy donut. And it's kind of taken off, so they called it the crazy donut too. Or at least while I'm in the shop anyway. Otherwise, it's known as the sweet chili donut.
Oh wow!
It's worth having.
Yeah, I like those combos.
Yeah,
got to keep people on their toes.
Absolutely, it's fantastic. There's no sugar on a donut. At least they haven't gone that far. But it's just yeah. Anyway, let's talk about you. Like you and I know each other for a little while. We met on the campaign trail last time through the traps, 2025. You stood for council. You stood for community board.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. You were elected to community board, didn't you? And like me, you missed out on council. And now you've recently announced that you are standing in the upcoming general election as an Alliance Party candidate. So perhaps give us a little bit of a 5-minute cliff notes about Anna Knight and what's kind of taken you from translator extraordinaire, France, to New Zealand, to actually this, you know, your political journey.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Well, actually, just one little note is that I'm still a translator. That's still my day job. Yeah, and it's I was hoping that it would fall off a little bit when I moved to New Zealand, because I was basically, that's one of the reasons that I decided to stay, was that I wanted to just get more of a life back, because I as much as I loved Paris, and I honestly thought I was going to die there and be buried there, I felt like a New Zealand girl, you know, just at heart, and that I was missing the natural world mainly. You know, this big city experience, if you're too busy to take advantage of it, is quite exhausting. You know, it's quite an aggressive human landscape. And all the thing, I mean, I loved living there because I'm a massive cinephile, and there's over 100 cinemas in Paris. So that was one of the reasons why I ended up living there for over 10 years. I was in France for 20 years. And yeah, so my political journey, I guess the seeds were planted a long, long time ago. I went to the University of Otago. I studied law, and I was very into my early legal opinions and things. I was, getting good marks and things at that. But then I decided partway through the first year that I didn't want to be a lawyer, which in some ways was a regrettable decision. But I was focusing on the language stuff, because I got very into French and literature and language and English literature and film. Film at the time, media studies didn't exist. It was part of the English department originally, the film film studies department. And the deans got very sick of me coming every year to kind of DIY together my my degree to fit in all the wonderful things I wanted to do. So I really loved studying here. I feel like Dunedin's my spiritual home. You know, I was kind of a COVID refugee. I came back here in November 2020,
right,
under duress from my family, pretty much. They'd been trying to get me back, you know, because obviously COVID-19 began in 19. And I was still in France, but I was looking after a friend who was cancer sick in the south of France. So I couldn't leave. I couldn't leave at that point, and pretty much got stuck away from my house in Paris. So I had supplied it for a Chilean friend's father was living in my apartment during the COVID time. And I was stuck in Toulouse during that period. And then I came back, the thought of a COVID-free summer in New Zealand, you know, I was coming back most summers, but for long periods, because being a translator, I just need a Wi-Fi connection and, you know, you're away laughing. So I would spend long time, you know, a long period in Nelson over the summer months working and, just being back in New Zealand. I ended up staying because the borders closed. So I was a bit of a COVID refugee, and then the incredible happened, and I met someone here when I was working at Ulverston. I was a live-in caretaker, and that was through Motoko, who was friends with old friends from, you know, two decades past when I was studying at the University of Otago. And Motoko said they needed a flatmate, and I had sprained my ankle off the Kepler track, and so I was staying with friends in Dunedin when I heard about this. And so I applied and ended up moving to Dunedin rather than going to our family batch in the Sounds. That was the other option, as I could have been surrounded by a massive classical music collection, which wouldn't have been so bad, but it would have been splendid isolation.
And sandflies, a lot of sandflies.
And sandflies, but, you know, I think the birds need those, so I'm not too worried about a little bit of... I'm inoculated, so because I was born here. I know that I've had, you know, past boyfriends visit who got completely ravaged at dusk at a New Zealand river.
Yeah.
So I think we've got a slight advantage there. But, yeah, in the end, I chose... social life and a bit of an adventure at Ulverston and moving back to Dunedin, which, you know, I've always felt really close to this place. There's something something about in the water here. I don't know. It's just, I mean, you'll know you've interviewed, what was it, 140
something
incredible people
yeah,
from this community.
Yeah.
Definitely there was a big pull of tug of the heartstrings that brought me here. And then meeting Matt was the clincher. So now I live in Blueskin Bay with my dog and Matt, and we just have a wonderful life, really. It's great.
Beautiful out there, right?
Yeah.
Like, genuinely. So what dragged you to community board to, like, running for council? What I mean, I know what my reasons are. I wonder if there were anything similar.
Well, yeah, I mean, politics has been a thread that's, you know, that interest has run through my life. I was very early on, due to my education here, it was quite a Marxist school of thought. You know, I was in film studies where we had amazing lecturers, Terry Jutel. There was a Pam Smart, who was my gender studies lecturer at the time, who went on to, maybe she'd come from Rice University. Anyway, wonderful people who really, I guess, radicalised me young, although I wouldn't have said that I was that radical back then. I think it was much more recent. It was climate dystopia, I guess, that dysphoria, sorry, that really triggered. I was looking at pictures of polar bears,
right,
and something just kind of snapped, and I think that's why I joined the Yellow Vests, when I realised, you know, that a major movement was happening, and that was my first experience of a major movement and major sort of front lines activism. And I'd always been a socialist, but I still consider myself a baby socialist. I'm not someone who can, you know, expound about, you know, the history of Marxism in lengthy ways, but you know, I've read Rosa Luxemburg, and there's been some inspiring figures who have sort of lit my path there. But yes, in terms of the local thing, I mean, it was also about getting grounded back here, and sort of realizing that because I have a flexible job, and in a way, it's that too. It's that I was finding myself getting heavily involved in local politics through, you know, I became interested in decolonial theory in France, and that led me to join the Palestine movement here, and become, you know, just friends with a lot of really wonderful local advocates, and got really into that, and that led to those decisions kind of snowballed into running for council. I never would have dreamed that I would be doing that, really. It wasn't a massive vocational calling. I sort of thought, this is something, there's no reason not to. It was more of a, like,
I'll give that a nudge, why not, you know?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a, I'm able to.
Yes.
And there's no good reason why not to.
Yeah.
Than a really strong, you know, you were born for this.
Interesting. I've got a couple of questions, but before I go to those questions, I'm going to need a quick word from our wonderful sponsor.
Dunedin, meet your new favourite bakery. Casa Valencia at 53 Musselburgh Rise is serving up freshly baked bread, pastries and gorgeous cakes. And if you haven't tried the ube donut yet, you are seriously missing out. Our signature purple yam donut and purple yam drink are the must-try combos your taste buds have been waiting for. Pair it all with a hot or cold drink, grab a cake for someone special and make your day a little sweeter. Casa Valencia, 53 Musselburgh Rise, Dunedin. Open Monday to Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. See you there.
So I just picked up a couple of things that you were saying. So you know, there's no, you never were sort of, you weren't driven to, like, you know, think I'm going to be a politician or anything like that. And neither was I. My politics, I was never even interested in politics. I came to politics because I loved the city. I kind of cared about it and wanted to give something back. And it was so very completely different. I was never an activist as a younger human being. I'm an activist now, but it's like, but I came to that maybe sideways. But what's then taken you, is my little leading into, what's then taken you to standing as in the general election for the Alliance Party? Because I had Victor came on the show 5 or 6 weeks back.
Well, here's your answer. I find Victor to be an incredibly I think he's an incredibly reassuring character, and I felt like I found I'd found my political home when I met Victor. I met Victor at a party through some friends, and then put it together. It was what I found interesting was during our run together in the local bodies, we had 30 seconds on the stage at Opoho Church to talk about, what we're about. And one of Victor's friends, which I didn't know was his friend at the time, John Howell, he suggested that in 30 seconds you talk about what you're about and what you're not about, you know. And so that's what led to a kind of rather sort of slogan speech at that night. I'm sure you had the same kind of, I think we all had to bring it down to bullet points.
I make it up as I go along.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
Oh, well, good for you. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's authentic and worthy, and, you've got a good brain, so that's
I'm not sure it's a good brain. I think it's just that if I try and write stuff down, I never remember it. And if I try and read it, I sound wooden. So I'm literally a firm believer in actually, I do not prepare for anything that I speak at. And that sounds really silly, but I've got enough confidence in my words to know that I'm going to say something that's coherent.
Oh, well, there you go. Good on you. See, it's practice makes perfect, eh?
At some point, I'm going to get that
wrong. See, I've been a more of a written form person, so I tend to
refer to, and
I need to get good at speaking. I'm not. I don't feel like I'm a Toastmasters yet. but basically I was trying to, I decided to run with the sort of translator thing and say, I will translate some of the phrases that you'll hear during this election. This is Joe Keller's platform, I guess, that, no rates rises, et cetera. And I translated it into, well, you're going to have to cut back on services. And one of the things was, politics, let's take the politics out of it is something that you'll hear a lot. And Victor actually wrote a whole piece on that, which was basically fleshing out, and I don't think he heard me at Opoho, but I think we're on the same wavelength on a lot of this stuff. That it's totally ideological, because I was like, well, said the politician, that it's not about politics.
Yeah.
Everything is political.
Yeah, it is, absolutely.
You can't escape that. And that's, I know the Greens get a lot of flack for going in lots of directions. Maybe because I'm slightly ADHD, but I do think that that's also shows their dynamism. I'm not totally against that. But that's one of the reasons I think the Alliance has a place as well, is that we need to spread the load. We're not trying to steal votes from anyone. I mean, for goodness sake, we have an MMP system which is designed for collaborative work eventually. Obviously the Electoral Commission's been trying to get rid of that 5% threshold to make it more democratic, and that's what the Alliance Party's pushing for. We're pushing for retaining public assets. I think that's something that none of the parties on the left are pushing hard enough. They may have them somewhere buried in their program, but there's a lot of things like just keeping wealth local and not tinkering around the edges with things, keeping our assets in this country.
Yes.
Is vital. So these are the big lines that sold me on this.
Because he's a very smart man. Yeah, and there's obviously Alliance has got a very sort of big history. We've been through that history with Victor when he came on the show. So it's not like you're suddenly just kind of coming out of the blue with something brand new, right? It's actually there's something that's been embedded in New Zealand politics far beyond my understanding of it, because I've only been here 15, 16 years. So, and Alliance had kind of come and gone by the time I even dropped on these shores, but obviously not gone in the sense of, but the thing for me, the problem with MMP is that it has that threshold of exclusion. So you've got parties like Opportunity Party, you've got parties like the Alliance Party, you've got other sort of, smaller parties that genuinely would add flavour, difference, dynamism to general politics, but do not get the opportunity, and only get the opportunity once every 3 years to kind of put their hand up a little bit and go, hey, there's us over here as well, by the way. We've actually got some really good ideas that maybe if you let us in the door that we'd actually be, we could contribute quite well with. and then they're gone for 3 years.
Mm.
And that's the struggle, right? So you're going to be standing for Dunedin or Tyree?
Tyree
electorate. Okay, cool. And Victor's standing
for the Dunedin Central.
All right. Yeah. And clearly, I would say, I mean, I'm not trying to pour rain on your parade or anything. Clearly, neither of you probably expect to win the electoral seat.
Yeah, well, I mean, at this stage, we're doing a membership drive. And I'd just like to say, if anyone is interested to learn more, to go to our website. And it's very easy to join. As a non-registered party yet, we have to ask for things the first time round that you won't be asked ever again. But we need a financial contribution, which was unanimously decided by the National Council of the Alliance that would be the lowest possible bar. So, you know, a $1 contribution is absolutely fine. And then you just need to do a wee squiggle on a digital form, which our WizKids have produced for us. So we're lucky to have a lot of youth members.
Yeah.
I guess youth is a broad range. You know, I myself am 47, not ashamed to admit it. AK-47 party was had recently.
I had
to mark that. So yeah.
I should probably admit something to you right now. When you invited me to that party, I didn't realise it was a party.
Oh.
So I saw it.
Apologies, Richard.
I saw it, kind of thought, that's some kind of activism type thing. If I can go, I kind of go. But if not,
you could be forgiven for thinking.
And I put it to one side.
That it was not a party.
And then I saw the photos afterwards and the stuff. I'm like, that's a party I missed out on. And I genuinely, I've been meaning to tell you for ages, I genuinely didn't realise it was actually your birthday party. So apologies.
I love this on the air.
I didn't know. This is the fun of radio.
But you know,
Anna, right
parties,
here.
I never get uptight about anyone missing a party. I just think there'll be other parties.
Well, exactly. I just don't have them. It's easier that way. I'd just rather celebrate another year getting older. Life's a party
that's
for
a
me.
Bit, that's a bit sad, Richard. We might have to do a surprise.
Executive
producers, take note.
Yeah, I just like I'm high in life every day, so I don't need a special day to celebrate. I'm just enjoying it every single day. So I don't know where we've gone now. You're talking about the. If you want people to get interested, they can come along. What's the website? Just get people know.
Alliance.co.nz.
Easy.
Yeah.
Okay. And they can go and have a look and find out a little bit more. But are you trying to gain party vote here? Are you just trying to make awareness? I mean, is it more about 2020?
I mean,
2029 rather than 2026.
Yes. I would say yes. Brutal honesty is something that Victor Biller approves of.
Yes.
And, you know, we're not, we are aware that, you know, it's going to take time to build relationships. And that's even amongst ourselves. You know, there's still, you know, a bunch of strangers there on this chat that, you know, I'm part of the National Council. We have fortnightly meetings. There's policy being developed. We have really great people. Like, so far, I'm just really enjoying the different things that people are bringing to the table. And, you know, I think there's also an opportunity for people to get involved even in policy creation. So there's someone who's building a Discord at the moment that members can have access to and have input into. So, you know, it's getting back to roundabouts and their other purposes, Richard. You know, if we can have this horizontal democratic approach to things, people's tribunals, basically.
Well, politics should be about everyone, right? It shouldn't be about this side, that side. That's the way I look at it. It's actually like if we all collaborated, then we'd actually all have something that we can be a joint part of. This kind of the latest kind of adversarial sort of politics that we have in the Western world doesn't seem to lend itself to actually ever getting anything done, because we flip-flop between like my side, your side. And that's why politics is so slow.
Yeah.
It's not dynamic because we're always like that side has to correct
MMP,
what the other side did.
MMP was supposed to do that. It was supposed to slow things down. That's why the whole talk of vote splitting just sort of seems ridiculous to me, because it's sort of like, well, we're supposed to be working together, and bridging those long-term issues, tackling those long-term issues, and this is supposed to help us get there. Otherwise, we're just sort of artificially recreating a two binary party position, which is, you know, what they have in the States.
And it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. We're aware that it doesn't work, and we need to, so, you know, there's just ways around that that we need to explore.
And that's where we're going to have to stop. I told you it would just disappear in time.
Oh,
I told
my goodness.
You, absolutely. Sit there. Lovely to have you on the show. We'll have you back again any time. Just wait while I just round things out. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
Well, that's a wrap for this week. Thank you for tuning in. I've been Richard Knights, and you've all been wonderful. Now remember, if you're looking for robust, respectful adult debate about all things local and further afield, and a welcoming online community doesn't take itself too seriously, come and find What's News Dunedin on Facebook and join our fun. On next week's show, we're talking to Anna Noonan from Dance Oti Poti, and look forward to seeing you next Friday at 12 on ORFM. And if you want to listen to the show again or simply share it with your friends, you can find the podcast at oar.org.nz or even on Spotify, YouTube or your favourite podcast provider.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.